Star Wars, Everything Changes, Part 2 of 4, a sequel to the Nothing Changes audio drama from Razor's Edge Audio, by Nathan Butler. Chapter 3, Challenge Accepted. As the Kiss Destroyer Thrawn's Eye made its way toward the surface of Calakis, taking with it the Forerunner and its injured Jedi passenger, a new arrival made its way into the system. The Coral Skipper sped its way toward Calakis' nearby moon, seemingly in perfect condition. Inside, however, the Coral Skipper's pilot was in less pristine shape. Within the Coral Skipper, Shakon Lan, still feeling the insurmountable rage at being bested by an infidel, fought to keep thoughts of vengeance from his mind as his hands and thoughts guided the fighter on its course. He would fulfill his honor-bound duty to deliver the Blueskin's message, and then the Yezzan Vong would descend on the red-eyed Jedi without mercy. Then, Shakon's honor would be restored. He had no idea he was being followed. Following closely behind Shakon Lan's Coral Skipper was, as far as the eye could see, nothing. The eye could be deceived, however, as could the sensor analogs of the Coral Skipper. In truth, Shakon was pursued by the very man upon whom he was daydreaming of wreaking vengeance. Lord Darius Kova worked his blue hands over the controls of the Dream Reborn with expert precision. The cloaking device his KISS technicians had installed was working well above specifications, and he was quite pleased with that fact. Chief Technician Nala Kim's expertise was beyond comparison on Lishidor, which was certainly to his credit given the exorbitant rates he charged for his work. He could always have simply made life easier on himself by purchasing one of the many fine KISS personal shuttles advertised ad nauseam on the local KISS Confederation's versions of the Holonet. But no, this shuttle had lasted him nearly 3 decades, with substantial modifications. When he had been a young man growing up on Sylvina III, he had taken an interest in starfaring sciences, but did not own a vessel of his own. When Emperor Palpatine and Darth Vader had bestowed the Lambda-class shuttle upon him, upon his promotion into the Imperial Sovereign Protectors, the Darkside Adept Division of the Emperor's Royal Guard, his chest had swelled with pride. Understanding that he would be taking many missions away from Coruscant, he'd had Imperial technicians refit the cargo hold, which he would have rarely used, into an exact replica of his quarters in the ISP ward at the Imperial Palace. He had then approached the top technicians in the field of dimensional studies to pursue an idea he conceived during his youth. Over the course of several months, his inquiries led him into a secret Imperial project to create a sort of super hyperdrive, one which operated using the physics of real space and hyperspace, the standard for hyperdrives, and a third component, other space, a third dimension outside of the former two. After a few failed experiments with drone vessels, the drive was finally completed by the Imperial engineers, and his own shuttle became the first to bear the fruits of their labor, which included some of his own insights and ideas. That augmented version of the shuttle, the Severed Dream, had lasted him nearly 2 decades. More recently, when he had achieved his position as KISS Nobleman, a war hero no less, he'd worked with KISS technicians on improving the shuttle yet again. Renamed the Dream Reborn, to symbolize the changes in his own life, the shuttle now bore KISS technology well beyond the Imperial tech used to create the shuttle's major components. The shuttle now bore a high-level energy shield, 3 precision laser emitters on the wing and fin tips that could fire a focused beam in much the same style, but at a substantially lower power level, of course, as a Death Star superlaser configuration, a pair of higher power cannons attached to either side of the shuttle's nose, resembling antenna or fangs, depending on whom one were to ask, and a cloaking device beyond the specs of any in the Imperial Navy, and the wing insignia and stripes befitting the new noble house of Darius Kova. Yes, this ship was, in many ways, his most constant companion over the years. The ship, he thought, feeling the weight of the lightsaber at his hip, and this. Over the years, the lightsaber had cut down friend and foe alike. Now, perhaps, it would take its share of Yuzan Vong blood. Outside the cloaked viewport, the Coral Skipper neared the moon. Any moment now it would land on or enter the moon, and he would pursue the warrior to his masters. He reached for the controls to increase speed, and stopped. On the furthest edge of his perception, he sensed something he had not felt in over 20 years. Another Jedi was near. The presence in the Force was unmistakable. At first, he thought it must be a trick his mind was playing on him. Too many memories in his head at once. But after a moment of focus, he knew it had to be real, and it was coming from below, on Calakis. He regretted having to call off his pursuit, but at least now he knew that the Vong were on the cursed moon.
I will deal with you and yours later, Broken One.
With that, the Dream Reborn decloaked and turned toward Calakis. Beneath the surface of the cursed moon of Calakis, a great undertaking for the glory of Yun Yuzan and Yun Yonka was underway. In a subterranean cavern carved from the moon by a Lagrincha, Yuzan Vong priest Jolan Tar walked proudly. Her dedication to Yun Harla and to the service of the Yezin Vong have moved her from simple religious duties to de facto head of the capture project within the moon. It made perfect sense to Julan Tar. The warrior caste had failed too often in pursuit of the gods' will. Her superiors understood that true service to the gods required the guidance of a priest, not a grunt. Of course, even de facto leaders had to act subservient when the real leaders came back on the scene.
Continue, priest.
Zolan looked sidelong at Commander Deacon. Why couldn't he have stayed gone?
Yes, Commander. As you can see, our work carries along well. The burrower worms will reach the core very soon, and the collector Quimoths in orbit are ready to receive the rich core materials. We are very confident that the mixture found here will be quite effective in creating a faster working, more thorough version of the substandard compound used against Aethor.
Deacon kept his gaze forward, not fully convinced.
Had you all seen to this personally, Julan Tar?
No, Commander. I'm letting the subalterns head the project with a cadre of shamed ones advising them. Did the Commander enjoy the inefficiency of asking the obvious?
Yes, Venerable One, it shall be done. Of course, the Blueskins are an autistic people, hence a decadent people. They will be no challenge to your might in the system.
Deacon smiled through tattooed lips. The moment was cut short, though, as two others entered the chamber, stopped in the doorway by Lontel, the base's head of security. Julan recognized one of the newcomers as one of Lontel's many subordinates. The other was a pitiful shell of a warrior, his body hunched, his gait limping, his jaw hanging as if shattered, looking every bit as wretched as a shamed one, if not for his ritualistic markings. It was Shikan of Domain Lan. She could barely make out the words as Lontel questioned the warrior.
Yuva, Tari.
Giba,
Shikan gasped.
Tula Jidai, Dadalia Kova. Kis Nisanida, Nitarata.
Lontel left Shikan standing in the doorway and approached Commander Deacon. After bowing to his superior, Lontel spoke.
He brings a message from a Jedi, Darius Kuva. He says, the Kiss words are not for us.
Deacon said nothing. He simply stared into Lontel as if he intended to blast the security officer to oblivion from sheer force of will. After a moment, Deacon turned a sharp about face and headed for the exit.
Chilafa.
We shall see. As the commander left the chamber, Julan's eyes fell on Shikan Lan.
He has done the heathen's bidding,
she told Lontel.
He is tainted. Feed him to the worms.
Chapter 4. Revelations. Darius Kova walked the streets of Kalakas's coastal city, Aflakon, seeking out the anonymous Jedi he had sensed from above. He found himself following the presence through the Force toward the government district of the city, but suddenly lost all sense of the individual in the Force. He stopped, focusing his full faculties on the search, but again sensed nothing. That's when he discovered a small hiccup in the Force, or out of the Force, to be more precise. The Jedi was here. He was being shielded by Isalamiri. Knowing that holding cells of every Kiss Justice War were equipped with a few Isalamiri in accordance with the wishes of the late Grand Admiral Thrawn, who had left detailed instructions for his settlements should he not survive to carry on the work of the Hand of Thrawn, Lord Darius Kova continued toward the Justice Wards. Upon arrival, he knew he had found his quarry. He knew this intellectually, and in his gut instincts, for as he stepped toward the target cell, his attunement to the Force vanished. Isalamiri. Miracle of Merkur. Right. In the cell, he could see his quarry. It was male, apparently human, a few years younger than him and a bit worse for wear. Male, human, clean-shaven, dressed in a white button-down shirt, a dark brown jacket, and dark pants, perhaps black or navy. He couldn't tell in the sunlight. His face was unfamiliar. What was apparent, though, was that the man was a prisoner. He turned to the single guard outside the cell. This Kiss colony tended to enjoy displaying prisoners as a deterrent to crime, hence the outdoor cell. But Darius Kova had always found the low level of guards on duty at any given time somewhat troublesome.
Why is this man imprisoned?
The guard blinked before answering, as if he never expected the question.
He was found aboard a ship that was disabled in a firefight above...
I am not blind. I see the Isalamiri. This man is a Jedi of some sort. Why is he imprisoned?
The guard bowed in deference to his class superior.
Forgive me, my lord. I thought you knew. These Yuuzhan Vong invaders. They have declared that they will cease their invasion of the galaxy if all the Jedi are turned over to them. Those places found to harbor them will be made targets. We are detaining this man until we can turn him over to...
The next thing the guard knew, he had two gleaming red eyes inches from his own, and furious hot breath blasting into his neck, nearly making him sweat if fear had not already done so.
Kiss, do not sacrifice innocence to the enemy to protect their own lives. Release him.
The guard stepped back, trying to gain some distance and composure.
But, my lord...
Daryaskova's hand dropped visibly to the lightsaber hanging from his belt.
Release him.
5 minutes later, two Jedi walked the streets of Calakis toward the spaceport side by side. It had taken only minutes for the guard to open the cell and rouse the prisoner, Corso Vale, to consciousness. Until now, the two walked in silence. Finally, Corso's curiosity got the better of him.
What do you people want with me?
The Kiss Jedi beside him replied in deadpan fashion.
The least you could do is say thank you.
Corso wasn't nearly as amused as the man in the cape seemed to be.
I'll thank you when I know what you want with me. That may be a lightsaber on your belt, but I've never heard of a Kiss Jedi.
The blue-skinned warrior smiled.
And you still have not.
Before he could comment further, Corso found the noble leading him around a corner. They had reached the edge of the settlement, and he could see the makeshift spaceport walking distance away. His forerunner, apparently still in decent shape considering the battle she'd just been through, sat on its landing struts next to what looked like a hybrid of a Lambda-class shuttle and a bird of prey from some jungle world. The Kiss pointed.
Your ship. You are free to leave at any time.
Corso turned back to him.
You still haven't answered my question, Kiss Jedi.
The man seemed to ponder how to answer for a moment.
My name is Lord Daryaskova, formerly of Coruscant, a long time ago. I am no more Kiss by blood than you are, but these are my people now.
Corso could almost feel the gears in his head grind to a halt.
I don't follow.
The Kiss, but not a Kiss, began walking toward the ships again. Corso fell into step beside him.
Many years ago,
the noble began,
I was like you, a Jedi Knight. My father trained my adoptive brother and I on a backwater world to escape the Jedi purges of Palpatine. When Darth Vader arrived and attacked, I blamed my brother for keeping me from saving our father. My brother became part of the rebellion. My father was executed by Darth Vader. I found a darker path. I became part of the Imperial Sovereign Protectors, a dark Jedi guardsman. I finally found my brother. I killed him, my own brother. I had lost my calling. I nearly lost my life. Left for dead, suffering from blaster wounds that my brother delivered just before he himself died. For weeks, I was brought back to health, digging deep into my father's light side teachings to heal the body that the dark side had tainted. It was arduous, but eventually, my body was healed. When Mithron Rodo, Thrawn, offered me the chance to come to this place, to serve in the protection of his people, I made it my penance.
Corso listened intently, but the man still hadn't answered his question.
These eyes, my skin, the changes were necessary to help liberate these people. They are the handiwork of Kiss science, an augmented physiology to go with my augmented shuttle and augmented lightsaber. My life, my beliefs, my role in the universe are reborn. If only my soul could be so.
Corso thought back as far as he could. Something seemed familiar about the story. But what? Then the gears finally kicked back in. It clicked. He stopped walking. The pseudo-kiss continued forward a few steps. Corso drew his lightsaber, igniting it with a snap hiss. The other stopped walking.
I know of you,
Corso said above the hum of the blade.
Dark Jedi. Royal Guard. Murdered a Jedi working with the Alliance.
From behind, Corso could see the Jedi incline his head.
Da Riask Ova. Darius Kova, brother of Traven Kova. We've been looking for you for some time. Traven was a friend. His death requires justice, not penance, Dark Jedi.
The Jedi looked back over his shoulder, toward Corso.
You are correct, Light Jedi.
His suspicions confirmed, Corso pressed the issue.
I'm Corso Vale. Traven was standing in for me during the mission on Ord Bendis. and you chased him down on Rakesh for vengeance.
Darius answered softly.
You feel responsibility. You should not. That is my burden.
Darius turned around, hands stretched to his sides before continuing.
But if it will ease your mind, strike me down, Master Vale. I ask no forgiveness from you. I have already received my brother's, if not my own.
Corso began to step toward Darius to take him up on the invitation, but stopped short.
That's impossible. Draven is dead.
Darius nodded.
When I first came to Kiss Society after we lost contact with Thrawn, I took the time to meditate, to study a Jedi holocron found on the moon of what was my home world at the time, Kitai. To cleanse myself, I immersed myself into the study of the psyche and the force that binds us. One night, I found myself pulled deeper onto the astral plane, the dreamscape, than ever before. My brother's soul, one with the Force, had pulled me in.
Impossible.
Apparently not. I found myself in a younger body with armor I had forsaken long ago. In anger, or for justice, Traven attacked me. I fought as fiercely as I could, but my guilt and remorse weighed upon me like blocks and chains. He bested me easily, with strike after strike, cutting off each piece of armor, stripping me of the veil of invincibility I had once lived under. In the end, I kneeled before him, ready to receive the killing blow. But as he swung his lightsaber toward my neck, tears came for the first time in years, and I asked his forgiveness. His motion continued, but before the saber could sever my head and destroy my spirit, he retraced the blade. It passed harmlessly before me. He dropped it to one side and said simply, "You are forgiven, brother." I awoke, feeling renewed. My grasp on the dark side was slipping. I could finally begin to atone.
As much as he didn't want to believe it, as much as he wanted to take his own justice for Traven, Corso sensed no deception.
And these people, this society you protect, this is your atonement?
After a fashion.
Corso couldn't believe what he said next, but when the Force prodded you in a direction, it was best to go along for the ride.
You seek further atonement? Then come with me.
Darius nodded knowingly.
To the cursed moon of Kallakis.
The Vong have set up some kind of base there. I need to know what they're doing, and to stop them if I can.
Darius took a step forward, looking at Corso's lightsaber. Realizing it was still ignited, Corso switched it off.
There can be only one reason to capture a desolate moon such as this.
Darius stepped up to speaking distance, negating any need to continue with raised voices.
The moon's core is an unstable mixture of liquid and gas, even some natural plasma. It is highly unstable. It would make a superior weapon, of the kind you could destroy entire ecosystems with. But mechanical devices cannot keep up with the constant changes of the mixture for long enough to harness it. It is an untapped resource.
Again, the gears clicked.
But biotechnology, a living creature, could compensate for the changes naturally.
Darius seemed impressed by this insight.
In theory.
That has to be it, then. Vong Biotech harnessing this compound.
Corso smirked.
Well, we obviously can't let them succeed.
Indeed. Shall we go, Jedi Vale?
Corso waved a hand toward the ships.
Lead on, Lord Kova.
Chapter 5. Partners.
I'm just saying, if you die while we're on the cursed moon, I'd take good care of her.
Darius gave a sidelong look at Corso.
I'm not going to die, and neither are you, and no, you cannot have my ship.
You'd be dead, though.
And your point?
It had been like this ever since Corso came aboard the Dream Reborn. The two had decided to leave the Forerunner on Kallakis, using Darius's faster, better-equipped vessel instead. Corso had flown Lambda-class shuttles before, though, and had been so amazed by the modified Dream Reborn that he had been virtually drooling since they began pre-flight procedures. Darius didn't respond to Corso's latest retort, hoping the conversation would simply die off if Corso realized he was only talking to himself. It seemed to work. Apparently restless but unable to engage Darius in conversation, Corso took out his blaster and began to turn it around in his hands. Darius noticed a few odd elements on the pistol and asked Corso about them.
This is my blaster foil. Sort of a blaster combined with a lightsaber. The D-shaped construction lets me hold the grip with a decent handguard, and either fire from the top corner of the handguard as a blaster, or ignite the lightsaber's blade from above the grip. It's just too bad I can't use both at once.
Corso explained.
Why only one at a time?
Darius asked, honestly intrigued.
Oh, it'd explode.
Darius blinked.
Good reason.
Corso eyed the lightsaber on Darius's belt.
I take it yours is red like the stereotypical Dark Jedi Super Warrior.
Darius gave a, huh, and checked the sensors.
No, it isn't. It was originally blue from my time training with my father. When I fell, I changed it to red, yes, to strike fear in my enemies.
Well, it does match your eyes,
Corso said under his breath.
But when I redesigned it during my penance, I gave it a purple blade, a mixture of the blue of my youth to remind me of my better nature, and the red of my more recent past to remind me of how far I had fallen. I also augmented it to move from lightsaber to light dagger. The Kiss prefer knives, as a custom.
Well, well, well,
Corso said with a smirk.
I guess I'm not the only one who took engineering at the Academy.
You are correct, sir.
Darius answered. Corso laughed.
That was sarcasm in your voice, wasn't it?
Darius smiled, but remained silent.
I knew it! Damn! My wife says the same exact thing to me when she wants me to shut up and sit down for dinner. She says, you are correct, sir, about whatever I'm griping about. And then I sit down and I shut up.
Darius stifled a laugh.
Laugh it up, blue boy. Someday when you're married...
I am married.
Corso was surprised into speechlessness. For a few seconds, at least.
You're what?
I'm married. It's custom for nobility, especially new nobility, in our society, that the new lord or lady be married. I had become close to a woman on Gitai, Alka Orilar Aryanya. Aryanya. We were the best of friends for years, so when it was time for me to take my station in society, I asked her to come with me and be my wife.
Your best friend?
Yes.
Do you love her?
In what sense?
Listen to you, in what sense? Do you love her?
Darius didn't answer. After a few moments, Corso spoke as one might to a younger brother.
You may not know how you feel, and you may not know how she feels, but when you let yourself be free of everything weighing on your shoulders, believe me, you'll know. And if it's right, do yourself a favor and really make it go out of real life together.
Corso touched a pocket in his jacket, feeling the old coin Sierra had found on their honeymoon within.
I don't know where I'd be without Sierra.
Darius didn't know what to say to this man he'd just met. Corso felt he might have crossed a line in discussing the matter. But seconds later, it ceased to matter. They had arrived at the cursed moon of Calacus. The game was about to begin. To be continued. You've been listening to a Chrono Radio presentation of Star Wars, Everything Changes, a sequel to the Nothing Changes audio drama from Razor's Edge Audio, starring Matthew Gordon as Darius Kova, Michael Sheridan as Corso Vale, Brian Bassetti as Traven Kova, Ian Bowie as Commander Deacon, Deanna Atkinson as Joel Antar and Sierra Vale, Jeff Driscoll as the Prison Guard, and Nathan Butler as Shokan Lan, Lon Tell, Emperor Palpatine, and the narrator. Written, directed, and mixed by Nathan Butler. Based on the Prelude to Hope Forgotten Knights concepts developed by Nathan Butler from concepts and characters originally created by Devin Reed. Star Wars Everything Changes is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Star Wars and any other copyrighted materials herein, including any music and sound effects, are reserved to their original creators. No infringing claims are intended. The writer and director would like to thank Devin Reed, Chris Newsom, Ryan Jordan, Chandler Morse, Megan Russell, and everyone else involved in the original creation of Star Wars Prelude to Hope, its prequel comic, From the Ashes, and its sequel short story, Forgotten Knights, all of which gave birth to Nothing Changes and Everything Changes. Extra special thanks is extended to Craig Moore, whose wonderful artwork would have graced the pages of Prelude to Hope From the Ashes, and whose concept sketches gave birth to the looks, feels, and dynamics of characters in Forgotten Knights, aka Everything Changes, and Steve Fluharty, the Mixer who stepped up to the challenge of completing Nothing Changes, bringing that original Prelude to Hope storyline to life in a new form. Thank you for listening, and may the Force be with you. StarWarsFanWorks.com, the home of Star Wars fan audio on the internet. It's your home for Star Wars fan audio genre news, a comprehensive catalog of fan-made Star Wars radio shows, parody tales, and serious audio dramas. With behind-the-scenes features, a message board, reviews, tutorials, convention coverage, an internet movie database-style directory of the entire Star Wars fan audio community, and the only fan audio community-recognized Star Wars Fan Audio Academy Awards held each year. StarWarsFanWorks.com. Fandom has a whole new sound.